Hello, world. It's time for TV, and welcome to On the Box, the Geek Show's dedicated television podcast.
Yep. Solid intro skills, Rob.
Yes.
Well done.
I have solid intro skills. How are you guys today?
I'm good. I think I'm good.
Well, you have to put it by committee first.
Yes. Today, I am outnumbered by the letter A, because there's only one Rob today, but there is an Andy and an Andrew.
Yes. We're quite regulars.
It's that high-fiber diet.
Yes.
Right, so let's dive straight. Don't rub your belly after I smear that. Let's dive straight into the news.
Yes,
we should. So I think I'll kick things off with some, I think, controversial news. It's something that's probably going to come as a shock to a lot of people. Maybe the world might even not be ready to hear this, but I think it's time that someone just stood up and said it.
What?
So I hope everyone is in their seats, because I can now officially reveal that Xena Warrior Princess is gay.
And this became... okay, this is kind of on the... In fact, this is worse than Harley and Poison Ivy, because everybody who read DC Comics with Harley and Poison Ivy knew they were an item. It just seemed like DC were the only ones who didn't know that.
DC, the last ones to catch on.
Yes.
But to be fair, this is different. Because this is news that the reboot for Xena Warrior Princess, which is coming sometime later this year, apparently,
yeah,
is going to have a protagonist who is openly lesbian. Because it was a thing in the 90s series that, like I said, everyone knew Xena and Gabrielle.
Were an item.
Yeah. Like, sure. Well, I think this is less like DC being still on the uptake. It's cause obviously everyone involved. Xena
Times
Warrior
have
Princess,
changed.
They knew full well,
yeah,
what they were going for. It's just at the time they couldn't come out and say these characters are in a relationship.
Well, times have changed, and thing is, I think if you think about Xena Warrior Princess, they were more bi than gay. Because the character of Xena had several boyfriends. Gabrielle met several men, you know, and then there was the whole thing with Hercules and Iolaus.
Yeah, but that was more like a ATV association. Look at his proof. These characters definitely aren't lesbians.
Yeah.
Wink.
Yeah, that's basically what it was.
Also, I said that, didn't even wink.
Yeah, but I know.
But there's no need for him to mention that.
Sorry?
There's no need for him to mention. And from, I think that the like your viewer's own interpretation is enough. If you know what I mean? It seems more of a publicity thing.
No, I disagree. Because I think it's very much the point that this is something that they couldn't say at the time.
Mm.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the guys behind it, you see, Javier Grillo whatever, you have a confusing last name, change it. Who's working with Rob Taper and Sam Raimi. So they've basically put in a Tumblr Q&A they did recently that there's no reason to bring back Xena if it's not there for the purpose of fully exploring a relationship that could only be shown subtextually in the first-run syndication in the 1990s.
Did you just say Tumblr, Paul?
Tumblr Q&A.
Oh, Tumblr Q&A, sorry.
Yes, Tumblr poll. Is the Xena reboot an examination of subtextual relationships that couldn't be shown in the 1990s, or a potato?
I've been trying to figure out how to do Facebook polls. I don't understand how to make them.
Facebook polls?
Yeah.
Do you mean Twitter polls?
Well, Facebook poll, Twitter poll, I don't know. Something to do with polls, and it doesn't involve Polish people at all.
I thought Twitter polls are just hashtags, aren't they?
Are they? I don't know.
No, you can get them. They're like proper. There's like two buttons and you have to click one or t'other.
Mm.
Okay. But yes, anyway, Xena is officially a lesbian. I don't understand why everyone suddenly started making a fuss over the whole sexuality of Xena and Gabrielle, because it was a thing during the 90s, during the first run.
I think the point is it's about the fact that there's still a very big lack of discrimination in TV protagonists.
Yeah, but
and so it's cool to see that they're willing to diversify that out a bit.
Yeah, but is there a need to announce it first?
Actually, well, Andy's because, kind of phrased it better than I did.
If it's there and it's in the show and it's obvious, yes, but announcing it before the series begins, it kind of...
But this isn't so much they've announced. This is obviously a question they've been asked in a Q&A that they've answered.
Yeah. Well, I think announcing it as well, there are still people who were fans of the original Xena series but aren't fans of homosexuality. So
they call them homophobes.
Yes. By making this announcement, yes, it's come from the Tumblr Q&A, but by making an official announcement at the same time, they're effectively saying to those people, look, this is what we're doing. You can either like it or not. Mm. You know, you don't have to watch it. And if you are going to watch it just to be offended, then, you know, you've got no leg to stand on. We've warned you well in advance.
Yeah. Fair enough.
That's a good...
And also, I might be reading a bit too much into this, but it seems kind of convenient. Because quite recently there was a show called The 100, I think.
Yeah.
And they killed off one of their gay characters, and there was a huge outrage about it. So it seems very interesting that this is coming out at a similar time.
See, I never understood that whole backlash against The 100.
Oh, yeah. I mean, in that case, it was kind of dumb, because it was an actress who was leaving the show.
Yeah.
And, like, that was the entire reason they killed her off.
The thing is, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter whether the character is gay or straight. If the character is going to die in a show, that's a decision that's made not based on what sexuality the character is or what gender the character is. It's made as a decision as part of the story process. It's got nothing to do with the gender or sexuality of the character. And in this case, the actress was leaving, as you said.
Yeah, and well, that's not really true, because it's not like these stories are in a vacuum. It's
no,
like they respond to fan reactions, so if there are certain characters who aren't well-liked, or if it's a particularly good show, characters who are really well-fan-liked, they're dead.
Yeah. Yes, you do have that point. There is that. But, I mean, no one tends to kick up a fuss if a straight character dies.
Yeah, but I think, again, it's because a lot of these shows, they will have, like, a designated gay character. And then it feels cruel. Like, really, the problem is just lack of general diversity.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. It's a lack of general diversity. I mean, my point here is that if you want equality, then you can't be up in arms about somebody who's gay or bi or transgender or whatever being killed off in a show and not be up in arms about a straight character being killed off in the same way.
No, because it's like... It's what I said. The whole point of the controversy is it's not that you killed off a gay character. It's that you killed off the gay character.
Right, okay. Hang on. So how are they gay then? If there's no other character who's gay?
Oh, like the lead character's bi or something. I don't know. I don't watch this show. I don't care.
Sorry, the thought just suddenly hit me. Hang on, what? Out of all of them, there is only one character.
Well, no, plus I think a lot of shows do have it where, like, there'll be a gay character and they'll, like, reference, oh, yeah, I have a boyfriend who we will never meet.
Yeah, and... Sorry.
It did. Yeah, it sounds like... Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's...
Maybe, like, all the gay character, like, the single gay character from, like, every show go to, like, a mixer. And that's where they meet people.
Oh, anyway.
Maybe there's like cross-dimensional Tinder. No, cross-dimensional Grindr.
Cross-dimensional Grindr. I don't have any words for this. I'm happy that they're making her openly gay. You know, I'm happy that that's a thing.
Oh, I'm just happy Xena's coming back.
I was about to continue on by saying I'm just more happy that Xena's coming back. I enjoyed the original Xena. It was a fun show. It was more fun than Hercules and Kevin Sorbo wandering around going, disappointed! We need more emotion, Kevin!
It'd be good to learn more about this Xena series when they announce it.
So who is actually playing the lead role of Xena?
I don't think they've actually confirmed anyone yet.
And the series is out when?
Just says again a reboot later this year.
So they're going. It is like getting to April time now. So it's like if they haven't casted Xena yet, the It's going to be quite a unique series. Xena with no Xena.
Who do you think would make a good Xena?
See, I don't know, because the problem is, like...
I want to avoid stereotyping people.
The name that immediately jumps to my mind is, like, Adriana Palaki, but she just seems to be default action girl for everything now.
Well, I was thinking of What's-Her-Face from Orphan Black.
Ooh, Tatiana Maslany. Yes, she should be in everything.
Yeah, but I mean, I think she'd be really good as Xena.
She would be good. Yeah, I want her. She should be in it. There, we've solved the casting problem.
There you go. Now you know who should be Xena. You're welcome. Anyway, so what's next then on the news?
Mm-hmm. Andy, what have you
should
got?
We, should we go to... It's quite exciting news, in a sense.
Is it?
This is with the whole rise of the virtual reality.
Yeah.
Sky have announced that they are going to hopefully provide virtual reality content within the coming years, either later this year or early next. And they've announced, for example, where the coverage of sporting events or Sky Arts with their wildlife programs and things like that,
okay,
of a virtual reality content alongside the TV show.
Okay.
But what is a unique possibility is what I've come take out of it is sporting events. This could revolutionise how we view sporting events.
Okay.
For example, would you get the benefit of, for example, where they have football matches, of maybe having a camera of sat in the crowd watching the football match with this virtual reality headset on?
Hmm.
This could mean a revolution in how we watch our TV shows and events.
Well, if you have a virtual reality headset.
Well, yes, if you want to pay the £600 for the virtual reality headset. Unless Sky have one in their package and they're really generous. It's something to look forward to. What does everybody think?
I don't know. See, I know everyone's saying virtual reality is the next big thing and everybody's throwing money at virtual reality.
Yeah, but I think we're still a ways off from actual, like, virtual reality being an integrated thing.
Yeah.
Like, I still think it's a bit... Well, it's still pretty much in the prototype phase, isn't it?
It's still a gimmick.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? I mean, they have announced the first one that they're doing as a side to their programming is a virtual reality F1 car experience, kind of.
Yep.
But...
So, does that mean you can sit in your home and experience an F1 car?
Yeah, being inside an F1 car going around the track.
But my point, my question to that is then, Codemasters do the F1 games and do them really, really well.
Mm.
And you can get a setup where it's as though you have an F1 setup. And then you basically put the VR goggles on and play the game. So how is Sky, for example, going to match up to that sort of experience where you're actually playing the game as if you were an F1 driver?
Yeah, instead of just sitting there going, yep, I'm in a car.
Exactly.
Mm. I think it's Sky, you're thinking more. I know this does seem like a virtual reality experience, sort of, but
yeah,
I'd think eventually you're going to see your live events and things like that where you're going to be inside that cockpit, you know, as he's going around the track.
Also, I don't understand how a virtual reality F1 car can be an experience, because if you've ever sat in a really fast car, then there's... unless they've got somebody off to one side with like several pillows on a stick, and every time you do acceleration, they hit you with it to simulate the G-force.
Or just like a fan to shove in your face.
Yeah. Unless they've got that sort of setup, it's not really going to be similar to the experience of actually being in a really fast car. Is it?
You spin out and someone just like pushes you off the sofa.
Yeah, basically. And that's my point.
That is a really good point, but...
It's like the whole watching a football match thing. You can simulate being at a football match,
but
you can't simulate the guy next to you who suddenly grabs you when your team score starts kissing you on the forehead because they're so happy.
Yeah, I mean, really all you're providing is just like a 360-degree way of looking at it.
Yeah.
And that's something that isn't going to be that useful for a lot of things. And I think that's the problem.
I mean, this does term, is this going to be a fad or is this going to turn into something?
I think in terms of TV, it's going to be a fad because it sounds like 3D TV.
I do like the idea of, for example, the possibility of sitting at ringside during a boxing event.
See, that'd
be
nice.
And being able to move your head to a live boxing event. Obviously, we're going to be far off the live and more, it'll be like on-demand content, but... that the whole point of that means you'd be able to experience that live surround sound, surround view of an event without actually going to it.
Yeah. Plus, I think it might be cool if you could, like, you could be watching the boxing match and, like, you could walk around the ring to get, like, a better view of it.
See, that'd be interesting. That'd be good. I like that.
Yeah. Stuff like that, it could work.
Yeah. But for something like a football match where you're in a stadium, you can't really walk around the pitch to get a better view, can you?
If it's virtual reality, you could like just stroll up onto the pitch.
Yeah.
Like casually walk alongside the footballers. Yep, he's footballing that ball good.
Yeah, but...
I don't really know football.
The thing is, if you're going to do the whole casual stroll bit, right, it's a football pitch. And if you're using this at home, you're going to have something that can do, like, perpetual movement in however many directions.
Oh, no, like you'll have to stand there and march on the spot. You'll look like an absolute clown, but.
Yeah. And people,
is that not the magic of 3D television as well?
What you might find good, though, what they've announced, a majority, like some of their programming that they have, like the interest, what they're going to go into is Sky Arts. And they do a lot of the wildlife programming. They do a lot of.
See, the wildlife programming would be good.
Yeah, that.
I think the world wildlife programming is a definite way to go.
I love the idea of like maybe an underwater view.
Yeah,
where you can see things. Be scared.
See, that'd be amazing just to have like just to be able to have that experience. You know, the surround sound, the vision, everything like that of actual underwater environments. That would be impressive.
Yeah, to feel like you're properly like surrounded by nature.
Yeah. That, I think, is worth pursuing. I don't think sports is the right way to go with it, unless, as you say, the boxing match.
I use sports as an example. Yeah. They are focusing more on the Formula One thing and the Sky Arts.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the Formula One thing, but I think the wildlife stuff is a definite winner. That would be the way I'd go with it, because it's something that really would excel with VR. If you think about all those animals that they keep saying, you know, we've never been able to film this ever, and this is the first time it's been filmed. You know, and the fact that you can basically get right up close and actually see that animal in detail using VR. And so you don't need to go look it up or anything like that. You've actually got it there in front of you. You can basically measure it against the size of your hand.
Yeah, it'll be.
Without actually disturbing its environment. And I think that's the best thing.
Be good to watch, good to keep on tabs of this story.
Yeah.
I think. Be expensive to start off with. But
what, to keep tabs on it?
Not to actually you.
Oh, okay. Right, okay. But I was getting confused.
Well, definitely we have to keep tabs on this.
Anyway. Shall we move on?
We shall move on to, unfortunately, what is it? Sad bit of news that Paul Daniels has passed away.
Yeah, I know. That came out of the blue.
Well, not really. He was diagnosed a little while ago with an incurable brain tumour.
Was he?
Yeah.
I didn't know about that. For me, it came out of the blue. I didn't know he was diagnosed. So the first news I had of it, of him having a brain tumour, was yesterday.
To be fair, it's only, I think it was only a week or something like that in between revealing that he'd been diagnosed with it and him passing away.
Yeah, I mean, the tributes have been pouring out for him, and with good reason.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Well, yeah, because, you know, he's Paul Daniels, he was... TV legend, pretty much.
And from round here.
He was local here, yeah.
Oh, yeah, he was, wasn't he?
Yeah, local hero. And he married his wife, Debbie McGee, who was
his glamorous assistant.
His glamorous assistant. But do you know what I liked about Paul Daniels was that he made it look easy. He didn't try and... You know the modern street magicians that you've got, like Dynamo and David Blaine and the rest of them? And they always try and do something over the top and impressive. And
it was traditional magic. He wasn't trying to bend a phone or walk on a wall or anything like that.
But the thing is, he made it... He was using traditional magic, but he made it seem really straightforward. you know, kind of an everyday thing. Does that make sense? You know, he wasn't trying to be really, really super duper impressive. He was just saying, look, it's,
it's less like a lot of magicians are going to like, look at me, I'm basically like a wizard.
Yeah.
But Paul Dano was like, hey, look, here's a cool trick I can do.
Yeah. And there was that line of his, you may like this, but not a lot. And I remember when we were kids, it was never a proper kind of Friday or Saturday night without watching Paul Daniels do magic or do one of the shows that he was on, you know, those quiz shows that he was on. Was it Wipeout, was it? Or?
But he's done a lot of stuff over the years, hasn't he?
He's one of those people who, you know how I watched The Secret Life of Bob Bunkhouse a couple of weeks ago?
Yes, you mentioned that.
There's a certain group of TV presenters who you kind of put in the category of legends. Bob Monkhouse was one of them. Paul Daniels was another one. They kind of fall into that category because they were just so affable and so good at what they did. And they knew, you know, they knew they were good, but I don't think they fully understood just how much people really liked them.
Or even if they did, it's the fact that they didn't show that. It's part of why people loved it.
Yeah, they didn't become arrogant with it, unlike the TV presenters of today, who could certainly learn a thing or two from them. That is certain, what's the word I'm looking for?
Class about them?
Yeah, class, that's it.
Mm.
It was a different class of TV presenter you got then.
Yeah, you don't really have anyone like that today, do you?
No.
It's all
Keith Lemons and Russell Brands and everyone like that, and everyone, and Alan Carr, and everyone's just trying to be more shocking than the next person. But there's nobody who can just sit there and be affable and just nice and easy to talk to.
And I think maybe the person who comes closest to that, and it's still a fair ways off, is probably Graham Norton.
Yeah. But the thing is, if you watch Friday Night with Graham Norton, he doesn't swear, does he?
Mm. I think it's Graham Norton.
No, he's just, he's a nice, affable guy.
But then you watch something like Alan Carr, Chatty Man, and half the stuff he says is swearing.
Mm. Graham Norton is more the old school, I think, now.
Yeah,
he is.
So, yeah, I don't know what the word is, like Paul Daniels, but...
I think class just, pretty much sums it up. A class act.
Yeah, and he will definitely be missed.
And on that sad note, I think we should take a break.
Yeah, we will. We will be back in a little bit with what we've been watching.
The world of comics and manga are much, much more complex than I'll ever know. So tune in to 4Panel on the Geek Show Podcast Network to make that whole world a little less intimidating.
Hello and welcome back to On The Box. Now we're going to talk about what we've been watching. Yeah, just about managed to get the words out. So, guys, what have you been watching?
Do you want me to go first?
Am I first up to bat?
It's a rare thing that I'm going to go first, so I'm going to go first. And I've been watching... How do I explain this? I've been watching Jeremy Wade dive into water, get wet, fight things with a stick, with string, and... generally end up usually with a massive, massive thing in his arms at the end of the show.
Okay.
Because I have been watching River Monsters.
I've seen clips of that.
That doesn't make it sound better.
When you first said Jeremy, I'm thinking, oh,
Jeremy
no,
Wade.
Yeah. Jeremy Kyle.
No, Jeremy Wade. There's a look at your face when I was explaining that. You're like, where's he going with this?
Oh, no, I knew exactly where you were going with this. I was just trying to work out. But what is he actually talking about?
Right. I've got to say, I like River Monsters. Now, I've watched fishing programs before, and, you know, you got that Robson Green's Extreme Fishing, whatever it is, and he's quite enthusiastic about what, in fact, he's very enthusiastic about what he does, and it's nice to actually watch somebody who's enthusiastic about what they do and passionate about what they do, because it makes you want to watch the program more, even if you have no interest in that particular subject. And for me, I really don't have that much of an interest in fishing, I'll be honest. And yet I've sat and watched Extreme Fishing and been perfectly happy about it, you know? But then I found on ITV, of all places, a show called River Monsters. I thought, I wonder what this is about. That was literally my thought. I wonder what this could be about. And then it turned out the clue was actually in the title all along, because it's about giant fish that live in rivers and lakes and streams and various places like that. And Jeremy Wade is a, what's the word I'm looking for? He's totally insane.
A nutter.
He is an absolute nutter. He's an affable nutter. He's a great, great presenter. And the way they've edited the shows makes it seem more dramatic than probably it is at times. And Jeremy is really good at and really knowledgeable. He knows what he's talking about. And he's also quite humble in a sense as well, because he knows what he's doing is basically catching a live animal. And he's basically a sport fisherman. He doesn't fish to kill. He fishes to show people this is what's living here, puts it back in the water. And some of the fish he's caught are insane. No, seriously, he's insane, but he's insane from the perspective of every so often, the piranha one, for example, he'll go, it's no good. I can't tell what's going on from up here. I'll have to get in there and have a look. You do know there's piranha down there. In fact, more than one piranha. There are a school of piranha down there, or piranhas, or whatever the plural is for piranhas, or piranha, whatever. And he dives in. He's got a snorkel and shorts, and he dives in. Very little in the way of protection, and he's looking around, and the piranhas come, and they don't attack him. You're going, you're supposed to eat meat. Why aren't you attacking?
Because piranhas don't.
Piranhas do eat meat. But they generally attack if the, like sharks, they'll generally attack if there's blood in the water or an open wound or something like that. And then he'll talk about various other fish, but sometimes the actual monster is a proper dyed-in-the-wool monster, right? Sometimes the fish he's after, because he traces stories about people being attacked and old folklore tales about these particular fish and old stories about, you know, that parents have told their children about these fish. And he'll trace them down and he'll find an area where they're most likely to be, and then he'll go fishing there to see if he can catch it. Never keeps it, catches it, photo, sometimes tag it for science, let it go. One of the ones that was ridiculous was a giant kind of ray, a freshwater ray. But this thing was so big that it basically created its own vacuum on the bottom of the river. So pulling it out of the river required more strength than you can imagine. And then just lifting it up, because it weighed so much, took about 8 people just to lift it up and hold it up so they could tag it for science. And this ray was massive. You know, we're talking like this ray was, imagine this table that we're at was round. It was about that big.
Right.
And this is one fish. And that's
did it have 2 tiny little puppets in its head piloting it?
No. But it did look like a flying saucer. But that's not the worst, the scariest one. Would you like to see one of the scariest ones?
Am I going to be scarred for life?
No. The episode was called Atomic Assassin from 2013. And one of the fish that Jeremy pulled out of the river, I don't know how to describe it except prehistoric.
Well, see, I think what happened there is that a transdimensional rift opened up and a kaiju managed to break through.
Yeah.
I think just thank goodness he managed to catch it before any of the Pacific Rim team had to be called in.
I mean, you've seen the picture now. It's ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, yeah. if that was swimming towards you and while you were swimming in the river.
Yeah, actually, I've changed my mind. I don't want virtual reality ocean tours. I'm not going in the water if there's things like that.
And then there's the catfish that are all over the place that grow massive and attack people.
Yeah.
And there's the, you know,
send them mean messages over the internet pretending they're people they're not.
I mean, do you know, I always thought piranha were basically...
That's a catfish reference.
Yeah, I know. I always thought that piranhas, for example, right? Piranhas were little fish with a red flush to them, you know, a red sheen on part of their body, and they always swam in schools, yeah? Oh, it's through river monsters that I found out that piranhas also have a much bigger, slightly nastier version who swims by itself. It's basically the delinquent piranha, I call it. It's off by itself, smoking cigarettes, watching Captain Kangaroo. You know, and that has much bigger teeth, much stronger jaws, and is a bitey little,
so-and-so.
And that piranha also exists. Like, yeah. And I thought a school of piranha was bad, but this one will just basically take a chunk out of you. So, yeah. And I also learned from River Monsters of this fish called the, is it kandaroo? Or something like that?
Kangaroo fish.
No, kandaroo.
Kangaroo. I was just trying to think, what would in a fight?
My imagination going.
Andy, what wins in a fight? Like one massive piranha or like a whole school of smaller piranhas?
No, no. This is not a massive fish.
Sounds like extreme Harry Hill.
The kandaroo, spelled C-A-N-D-I-R-U, is basically, it's known as the toothpick fish or the vampire fish.
The vampire fish?
Yes. And it's known as the toothpick fish or the vampire fish. And it is very, very, very small. And there is a horror story about the kandaroo. See, the normal thing about the kandaroo is if it has an open, if you have an open wound.
Oh,
or
it looks cute. It's all tiny and thin.
Yeah, all tiny and thin. But if it gets inside your body, it'll eat you from the inside out.
Oh, yeah. No, don't like it.
And the horror story about this is basically somebody went skinny dipping in like the Amazon or something like that.
Oh, no.
And
I know the story.
Basically swam up his, swam up his junk and got lodged there.
Yeah. That thought it was taking a tunnel into an underpass.
Yes.
Ooh, no.
And I'm going to leave it there. So, River Monsters. Seriously, it doesn't matter whether you like fishing or not. River Monsters is actually really good to watch. It's really informative. It's actually quite entertaining. And when you find out what he's chasing after, when you see the fish itself, you just go, my God, I'm glad I don't live near a river.
Oh, okay.
I take it these are broad.
Most
like
of them,
Redger
yeah.
Beach.
Most of them, yeah.
You know how on Google Images search, there's like groups at the top that you can click on?
Yeah.
One of them from the kandaroo is just urethra. I'm going to close that right now.
Oh.
So, Andy, have you been watching anything?
This is on a lighter note. This is a more suitable to what... suitable along the lines of the show so far as well. I've been watching Penn and Teller Fool Us.
Do they?
Not the Penn and Teller.
Comma Fool
Us. Yeah.
All right.
Semicolon. Or colon Fool Us. And this is where you get magicians. You get about 5 or 6 magicians a show. Come on to, and you've got the judges, Penn and Teller, sat there. And as the title suggests, they have to basically fool them so they won't know how they did it. And the winner gets to be an opening act on their Las Vegas show. But it's hosted by Jonathan Ross.
Yeah.
And it's actually, I mean, I sat through it and it's actually quite entertaining. I was thinking, oh, these are going to be maybe wannabe magicians that similar to what you get, you know, like Britain's Got Talent. Some of them are going to be terrible, some of them are going to be brilliant. But no, these are all brilliant magicians that do a really good tricks, but the majority that fool them are not many. And it is really, I mean, somebody got Simon Pegg onto the stage as well, and he did a trick where he guessed a time.
Oh, but so the trick wasn't just that, like, he made Simon Pegg magically appear on stage?
And he made, no. And he made, like, the hands on the watch he gave Simon Pegg disappear. And basically, Penn and Teller just cottoned on at the end, said, it's a fake watch. You've done this, you've done this, you've done this, and you haven't won. And I'm like, it's a brilliant idea for sure. And I like it. It does have that traditional magic. And they also always perform a trick at the end as well, Penn and Teller.
Yeah.
Which is very good to watch.
Yeah, no, yeah. It's good, I think.
It's on Channel 5 as well. It was ITV, but Channel 5 bought the rights to it. Broadcasting rights. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of a bit of risk for the magicians who go on it, though, isn't it? Especially if Penn and Teller, like,
they
work out how they're doing the trick and say it over TV.
They don't blow the whole how they did the trick out the water.
Yeah, but
they'll say that's a traditional trick that we know, and we know what you've did there.
Yeah, but surely if they say something like, "Oh, you're using a fake watch," that's still the trick ruined, isn't it? Like, you can't really do that anymore because you can just say, "No, you're using a fake watch."
Yeah,
That might be why Channel 5's got it.
Yeah, but they do love ruining other people's lives.
But no, it's. I think it was on ITV. I think originally.
Yeah, but no, I joke, but yeah, it is interesting to know like how magic tricks are done, isn't it?
Started on March the 6th, so was that, I think it was a Sunday? Is that a Sunday? Yeah, it's a Sunday.
Definitely one of those days that ends in day. Pretty sure it starts with the consonant as well.
So yeah, on Sunday, Channel 5, Penn & Teller Fool Us.
Interesting stuff.
Cool.
It's very rare I recommend something from Channel 5, as you know.
Yes, we know. But
I think it's before anyone recommends something from Channel 5.
Fair enough.
On to me, then.
On to you.
Everyone's just sitting here staring at each other like...
Oh, I was hoping we could drag it out a bit longer if we just all sat and stare. Like, that can be the basis of the show from now on.
Just sit there and stare at each other.
So we would make like an hour and a half long show, and just the whole point is to see who talks first.
That's going to be a very boring show.
No, it's going to be tense and exciting, Rob.
No, we need to do that for YouTube. And just have the dramatic music. And then, you know, camera cuts to, like, your face, and then my face. It's all just dramatic music. And we'll have, like, themes from Pale Rider and stuff like that.
I mean, to be fair, we already did that when, like, you and Andy were staring at each other trying to decide who was going to open the show.
Yeah.
In my head, I was going, dun, 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 dun.
See, I tried throwing him off by blowing him a kiss, and it didn't work because he just retaliated by narrowing his bishy eyes, and suddenly I was like, no, I'm
uncomfortable.
Yeah,
that was the wah-wah-wah-wah-wah-wah moment.
Yeah.
So I had it all planned out. Anyway, what have you watching? So I've been watching Legends of Tomorrow, because I do like me my superhero shows.
Ooh.
So this is the newest one on Sky One at the moment. Basically, the idea is it's a show starring a bunch of side characters from The Flash and Arrow. Basically, they get assembled together by this guy called Rip Hunter, who is from the future and can travel back in time. And hilariously, it's played by Arthur Darville, who was Rory in Doctor Who.
Yeah, it doesn't quite make sense to me.
No, I like it. It's like he's finally moved up in the world.
He's graduated from the Doctor.
Yes. So basically, he assembles a bunch of kind of random side characters from both shows to help him stop Vandal Savage, who is a guy who is immortal and in the future will end up taking over the world. That's cool. You've got like an interesting mix of characters. You've got Firestorm from The Flash, got Atom, who was on Arrow. You've got Captain Cold and Heatwave from The Flash, who are my favourites because they're awesome. And, you've got White Canary, who is pretty cool. And you have got Hawkman and Hawkwoman, who was actually introduced in like a crossover that Flash and Arrow did, sort of introduced the premise of the series, which was interesting, except Hawkman sucks. Like, that's something we need to get clear straight away, is that Hawkman is the worst, and I hate him. Because he's super creepy. Because, like, basically the whole point is that Hawkman and Hawkgirl, they are people who keep getting reincarnated, and they're a pair of lovers. Well, it is that Hawkgirl got reincarnated, and she doesn't remember her past lives. And then, like, Hawkman shows up and is like, oh, yeah, we're boyfriend and girlfriend. You have to believe me. And it's super stalky and creepy.
It does sound...
But hang on, wasn't that the case with the comic as well? With the cartoon that they did, where Hawkman was... some guy got Hawkman's memories and was going after Hawkgirl, saying, I am Hawkman, I am your husband, blah, blah, blah. And she's going, nope, don't remember you.
I think it definitely happened in the comics.
Yeah.
But I think it happened in the cartoon.
I think it was Justice League cartoon it happened in.
Yeah, might have been. Actually, no, it can't have been. Because Justice League I'm sorry, Andy, because now we have to talk about Hawkman and Hawkgirl, who have literally the most confusing comic book stories ever. Basically, there was a time when Hawkman and Hawkgirl, they didn't get reincarnated. They were actually aliens from Hawk Planet.
Yes.
And in the Justice League cartoon, Thanagar. She was an alien from the Hawk Planet, Thanagar. I don't like Hawkman and Hawkgirl. They're so confusing.
Yes.
Okay.
At one point, Hawkman was like a massive hawk monster thing.
Yes.
That happened in the comics.
Yes.
I don't know why. It just did.
It's just one of those things. We take it with a pinch of salt these days and go, ah, DC. We treat DC comics like we treat Japan these days.
Yeah, that you just shake your head kind of before that. Go, oh, you rambunctious scamp.
I don't know what to say to that. I don't think I can top this.
No, anyway, Legends of Tomorrow, I really like it. I think it's got this real sense of fun. Basically that, because you've watched The Flash, haven't you, Rob?
Yes.
And you know that sense of charm that was like running right through the first series?
Yes.
That's carried a lot over into this.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. It's just, because I think the idea is it's basically taking a bunch of characters who are fan favorites from these shows.
Yeah.
I just throwing them all together and it works really well.
One of the things that confused me is if you've got Firestorm, why do you need the fiery guy who's teamed up
Heatwave.
With
Heatwave? Basically, you need Heatwave because him and Captain Cold are awesome together.
Yeah, I know. It just kind of makes a nonsense about having Firestorm, so couldn't they have gone with somebody else?
Yeah, no, it is kind of weird having like two guys who are basically flamethrowers.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's not as weird once the series starts.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of just one of those things you're sure going to accept it. I think just because, like, so it makes sense for him being on the team because they all play so well off each other. It's like he's sort of the big dumb muscle guy.
Yeah.
Firestorm is like the straight up guy who wants to do good. And Captain Cold just wants to steal things. Which I love that, like, Captain Cold and Heatwave say, yes, we will join you to save the future so that we can travel through time and rob all the banks ever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I heartily recommend it. It is a lot of fun.
Cool.
Sounds interesting.
I think I'm going to have watch this because yeah. I've been holding off on watching it partly because I've got too much work to do and partly because I wasn't sure what to expect. So if you've given it a seal of approval, I shall duly give it a try.
Yeah. Also, what I'm hoping is that it has a, because this is going to be like an anthology series. So yeah. Series 1 is going to focus on this group of characters. Series 2 is going to be completely different characters, new storyline. Hopefully that'll help it maintain like the pace and the just sense of charm it has at the moment.
So what they'll probably do with season 2 then is center it around Supergirl?
Maybe. I know Constantine's already been confirmed to be in it.
Yeah.
But I think because basically what seems like the problem's been with Flash and the Arrow is that they've started off, like they've put a lot of work into series 1, series 2 as well for Arrow. But then sort of all the plot they've had built up has just run out.
Yeah.
And then they've had to move on and just not really had a sense of direction.
Yeah.
And I think that's impacted it. So I think being able to like tell a complete story every series is going to help this one.
Yeah, I agree.
So yeah, I have high hopes for the series.
Fantastic. So, anything else anyone wants to add?
I like television programs. Actually, I will add, what I did also see this week was the latest episode of The Flash.
Oh.
And as much as I've been banging on about it, I think this episode did kind of recapture a lot of the charm that the old series had.
Okay.
So I'm hoping it's, you know, building itself back up.
Possibly, because I kind of fell out of love with it a little bit.
Yeah, it's just, it hasn't seemed to know what it's been doing this series.
Yeah, it's like Arrow. I've kind of fallen out of love with Arrow. I've just been watching it and it just seems like, yeah,
Arrow I have been struggling with.
You know.
Because it's just, it's not as good anymore.
No. First couple of seasons of Arrow were great, but then...
Yeah, because I think, first it was like, they had their whole mythology set up.
Yeah.
But then they also introduced Deathstroke, which helped it for the second series.
Yeah.
But then, by the third series, they had to, like, try and do a whole new, completely different plot line with Ra's al Ghul, and it's just like, no.
Doesn't quite work.
Yeah.
Doesn't quite work.
I think it's probably been worse in The Flash, though.
Yeah.
In that, like, they've got a villain now who is pretty much exactly the same as the villain from the first series.
They need somebody different.
Yeah, it's like, kind of, I get the idea of bringing in, especially not to spoil it too much, the first series ended with him only sort of defeating the bad guy.
Yeah.
So I get, like, the idea of bringing in a similar bad guy for him to have, like, a second chance. But I feel like that's something that should maybe be, like, a smaller arc and not an entire series.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Mm.
Ah, right.
I can say it as well, though.
Yeah.
I've been watching, as always, probably one of the best shows, I think, on TV at the minute, Impractical Jokers.
Oh, God.
And, my God, I have to bring up the forfeit where they have to dress up as Princess Leia and be a ring side. You know, the ring girl where it has to hold the round one, round
in, two. In the gold bikini. I can never watch Return of the Jedi again. No. Oh, okay. So and on that note...
It's always a recommendation from me.
On that note...
Yeah, pardon, on the thought of... Big sweaty men in gold bikinis.
Yes.
That's how we're ending the show, Andy. I hope you're pleased with yourself. This is what you brought us to.
Yes. So, yeah, we're going to end this episode of, what was it, Interdimensional Grinder?
Yes. No, Cross-Dimensional Grinder.
Yeah, Cross-Dimensional Grinder. Yeah. We're going to end this episode of Cross-Dimensional Grinder. We have been on the box.
I've been Andrew.
I've been Andy.
Right. If you want to get in touch with us, you can do so at studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. The Geek Show Podcast Network is a voluntary organization, so please show your support by clicking on the donate button on the right-hand side of our website or by purchasing one of our lovely items of merchandise from our shop, which is also available on our website, thegeekshow.co.uk. All our shows are available on Mixcloud and YouTube's very soon, and also iTunes and Stitcher and various other places on the webs. And until next week, we'll see you later.
Thanks for listening.